Hi, and welcome to the fourth episode of Differential Diagnosis, a HouseMD podcast, where we'll be discussing the fifth episode of HouseMD. My name's Harvey. I'll be hosting, and hosting with me is my friend Gaz.
Oh, hello. Nice to meet you all again for the fourth time.
Yeah, so as Gaz said, we're here to talk, hopefully insightfully and interestingly, and analyze every episode of HouseMD from start to finish, about 15 years after the fact.
Wow.
And yeah, and as you might have known, you probably hopefully understand the concept from now. We have the episode running in the background, but me and Gaz are pretty much just going to talk through it, talk about interesting points, and try and talk about the entire HouseMD series as a whole, but while analyzing each episode individually. Does that sound about right, Gaz?
Yeah, that sounds absolutely right. We're going to offer maximal depth and maximal insight into the mind of David Shaw. today, it's a festive one. It's a theological one. Ooh. And as always, a philosophical episode to examine. And, you know, as all things, you think it's going to be fun and festive and happy and full of frivolity, and comes with a Halcyon twist.
In that it's really depressing.
Well, yeah, I guess it is really depressing. you know, you have a cynical, narcissistic doctor who seemingly hates the world, and his situation in this episode is that Christmas is happening all around him. And how is he going to react to all of this Christmas happening all around him?
Well, that sounds absolutely fascinating. Let's get on with it. So as you said, guys, it's the first Christmas episode. How many times do they have Christmas in house? I swear it's twice a season.
Twice a year, obviously. I have no clue, but I guess it feels like, you know, it's a long-running series that's going to have a lot of Christmas involved.
Christmas seems to be used as a way to show the passage of time in house, because it's not obvious how much time is passing until Christmas rolls around. So I don't know if the showrunners we'll have to do a Christmas count. We'll do a HouseMD like really pseudo philosophy count, and then we'll do a Christmas count, because so we know that at least a year has passed. So who knows? By the end of the series, it might be like 40 years in the house episode. These people have just been stuck. But
maybe house ages really well, or badly. He might have been like 20 when season one came out. I don't know. the other thing that I would love to do would be a Christmas live stream where we watch all of the Christmas episodes back to back for viewers and listeners' pleasure.
It's a plan. We'll get on it. We'll do it on Christmas Day. Really disappoint the family when I cancel for that. I've got to do my house podcast.
Disappointing. Sure, they'd be proud surely. Of me. Disappointing, surely enlightening.
Yeah, they'd be really proud of me. Well, this is another significant episode, aside from being the first Christmas episode, in that, hey, religion turns up. It's a big thing in house. House doesn't like religion. It's one of the usually the more interesting episodes of House. I think it really, this is a great early episode for this to bring in religion, because it's I'd say like religion is kind of like the sea that House really has the freedom to swim around in, and just be as sort of logical, mean, kind of insightful as possible. I don't know if you agree, but some of the more insightful moments and the best moments, I think, turn up when House is dealing with religious people. Sort of like the when the Batman meets Joker, it's always the best moment. So the episode opens up with the first patient. This is a cold open, which is set in the clinic interestingly enough. We're not outside the hospital. And it's three nuns, one of which is experiencing what the other nuns believe to be stigmata.
What I particularly like about the opener is that David Shaw kind of does a bit of a rope-a-dope with the viewer.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, he presents the... She presents the hands, and you're thinking, maybe this is a stigmata thing. And you think, oh, is that going to be the central theme, that this woman's going to present with all of the stigmata symptoms, and then it's going to be a test of his faith or his belief in, or lack of belief in God. But actually, no. It's much more menacing than that.
Well, that's an interesting thing, because I agree with you. I think in a lot of other shows, especially in America, I get the sense Lost has this, like there's always like a spiritual element. And I find in a lot of shows, especially this, it's like Battlestar Galactica is very guilty of it as well. I don't think there's anything particularly wrong with giving like the religious element like a platform. But I think a lot of shows, even though they're incredibly scientific and grounded, will at the end say, oh, well, maybe something like religious and spiritual did happen. Maybe it's possible. Whereas, and I agree with you, I think another medical procedure would have been like, oh, it's stigmata. And then like lots of things would have occurred that made it seem like, you know, maybe something religious is happening that's real, and House would never be able to solve it. But what I quite like about House, especially this episode, is, as you say, not only does that not happen, but at the end of the day, House always finds a reason for why it's happening. And it's quite interesting that then the religious people go away with the idea that, hey, it happened and I believe the reason was God. And House says, no, the reason is actually all these medical things. And they say, oh no, but God caused them. And I think it actually is a much more grounded way that people experience religion, in that it doesn't actually matter what the reason is, that religious people will interpret events like that as religiously meaningful. Whereas, so it doesn't like kind of just cop out at the last minute and just say, oh, maybe it was God. It kind of does both in a way, because it's how people interpret the events.
Yeah, it kind of deals with the subject matter in a very mature way. And I think we'll see later in the episode ways in which characters use religion as a kind of tool to engage with patients as well. But we'll definitely touch upon that later on when it arrives in the episode as we're watching it. Mm. But yeah, you're absolutely right. It does treat religion much more maturely than saying, oh, it's a spiritual thing, there's a test of faith, and then there's like an open question, which kind of it's like hedging your bets a little bit, where you're saying, if it was like a kind of more cliche approach to this subject matter, it would have painted House as a man of science, but also a man open to religion.
Mm.
And they would have concluded like that, you know, kind of leaving it out as an open question, whereas actually it sets in stone House's belief in what he calls experience and logic over belief.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I wouldn't say House never like comes up against something he doesn't understand. It happens in a few episodes, and when we get there, we'll talk about them. But it's very much, it's kind of like when House is in awe or confused, he's confused at the unknown, but he never prescribes anything to it. Like House will change his mind about something, he never suddenly goes, oh, actually, I'm a Christian now because something happened that I can't explain. He's more in awe at the fact that he can't explain it.
Yeah.
But he never changes his mind. And I agree with you. Because that's, you know, I don't think non-religious people just become religious because of a single thing that happens. I mean, some do, actually. What am I talking about? I definitely know stories like that. But I agree with you. I like that House is never convinced that easily.
Yeah. It would have just been so much easier and much more satisfactory to an audience in general would be to just to kind of hand wave and say, well, maybe he can still be a scientist, but he can still, and a medic, but he can also still be religious, even though he holds kind of quasi-fanatical views about what experience and logic can produce in contrast to religion. So Hey, it's an interesting point.
Absolutely.
I do like this first scene where the presents are the candy canes, and he kind of fake pretends to be insulted, and it really, I guess, triggers Cameron a little bit.
What's well, a nice? It's a nice little like, hey, I'm all for more development of the characters, and it's yet again, it's tiny, but it's a thing that lets you in that immediately. She was trying to be nice, but immediately is then terrified that she's offended House, which even though House is like the rudest guy, he offends people all the time. She's terrified that she's hurt his feelings, even though he doesn't care about her feelings.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It's so much about her.
And we're also seeing at the moment, there's like a weird thing going on where Foreman is like a mini House in the sense that House is like very skeptical of this kind of religious context to everything that's been implanted by the nuns.
Mm-hmm.
And in a professional context, Foreman is routinely skeptical of everything House dictates as if he's God. In the sense of saying, this is what I think it is. You better do what I do and don't question me unless you have a legitimate reason to question me.
Mm.
Which is never for Foreman. Not allowed.
Well, this, as you say about Foreman, this Cameron, I think the last episode was Cameron's episode.
Yeah,
that's when she got a lot of her development, and now this is extremely focused on Chase and Foreman.
Yeah,
and it's where Chase and Foreman, a lot comes out about their characters. We have Chase's saying that he has an issue with religious people in a very similar way that Cameron was alluding to like the way she was facing death with the infants dying in the maternity ward in the last episode. It kind of alluded to the fact that maybe she had a history there, and it introduces the same thing with Chase hates religious people. I wonder why. I'm sure we'll find out more about his background. And then
he has an interesting arc, and this is something I was going to touch upon. He uses religion as a bit of an instrument to connect with the patient.
Sorry, mate, go on.
No, that's all right. Oh, we're on to the to the bonus round. It's the flatulent inflammatory bowel Santa.
Absolutely. Just another, like, ooh, House, he's got... he offers strange remedies. Like cigarettes. But yeah, again, another nice little sequence, a great little skit. The show does these really well.
I wonder if Big Tobacco paid for that one.
Do you know, back in the day, probably.
Oh my God.
But you raise an interesting point with Chase's, like the way that he reciprocates the religion, and we kind of see his relationship to it, in that they have somebody responding to the religious element positively. I think House is extremely negative most of the time to the religious aspect. And Chase responds to it more positively, but in a more empathetic way.
Mm.
You don't get the sense that Chase is reconverted back to his, Catholic roots. But he definitely throughout the episode empathizes with, because he understands the thought process. Like, I don't think House has ever been religious. He seems to have had a secular background and doesn't really think of the world in that way, but Chase can kind of understand it. And I think it strikes a nice middle ground in that it's not just House versus religion. There's like other proponents of it and other degrees of religiosity.
Yeah. I'm always a bit skeptical and maybe a little bit cynical because I don't know whether Chase is, trying to connect and empathize with the patients or merely... instrumentalizing his religious experience as a means to alleviate any anxiety or concerns that the patient has in this case.
Oh, you think he's using it as like a diagnostic tool?
It's a bedside manner thing, isn't it?
Hmm.
He's literally at the bedside, and maybe they're real feelings. Obviously, they are, but. I'm always a little bit skeptical. Maybe I'm reading a bit too much into it, but Also, this is a classic, while examining someone in a giant magnet tube, something crazy happens to them.
Oh, is this another MRI problem?
Well, we're about to find out. Yes, I think it is.
Oh, yes.
I think she just starts having a seizure. She smells weird shit after she gets out of the... smells shit, sees God, and then collapses into a seizure.
I mean, like, yeah, as far as MRI scenes going wrong, always. But it's something about the MRI machine. I don't know why something always goes wrong in the MRI. Like, I as you say, I think it's every episode. Like, we'll tot it up, but it's a hilarious fucking meme that you've noticed. It's just ridiculous. obviously. Oh, and another piece of character development during this. First time that Foreman really stands up to House before it's been a kind of before it's been a kind of, like, you know, he's questioned him, he's got angry at him. But in this one, he goes to Mama Cuddy and he gets House stricken off the case.
Yeah. Or tries to.
Well, he does for a good chunk of the episode. A lot of this is quite interesting. You actually, this is where the team's most active, because the team is running around with Cuddy trying to solve it, and House sort of goes full on private investigator.
Yeah.
And, you know, it kind of shows the way, you know, the ways that everyone thinks. It shows the way that Cuddy tackles it in a very by the numbers, like, we have to do it this way, and is very cautious, whereas House just sort of goes completely off the rails, interviews people, looks for the kind of small clues that aren't necessarily medically relevant at the time.
Well, don't seem medically relevant at the time. I think the other thing is, you see, it's two different, completely different mindsets. You have one that is a good physician and a good manager of people because of her kind of fairly conventional way of doing things.
Yeah.
Which is can be pretty good, because it does come in handy in a lot of contexts and throughout the series. But House's special power is to basically see in the minutiae of the detail something that other people don't.
Yeah. And you're right in that they kind of like, they show each other's weaknesses as well. Like, House would be a terrible manager, Cuddy is a terrible House, and you see them kind of flipping their roles, and they're both terrible at it. And there's a running joke of each one of them is saying, oh, you're going to kill the patient, or maybe I'm going to kill the patient. And it's just sort of a race of who cannot kill the patient. And it kind of turns out that, you know, House was originally going to kill the patient with his initial treatment, and then Cuddy sort of takes over the case, and then House steps in at the last minute to stop her from killing the patient. So it's actually through interfering and getting in everyone's lives, they stop killing the patient, but not because anybody was actually successful in not killing the patient by themselves. Because House is kind of... House is questioned on his... because the nun, when she goes into anaphylaxis or whatever, House offers her, gives her some epinephrine. And there's a big... Cuddy assumes that House has given the wrong dose. And that's a big moment of... That's why House is, yet again, showing that obsessive quality of House. He spends the entire episode... not necessarily just trying to clear his name, but just because he, like, just can't believe it. Like, he just needs to know the truth behind it.
Yeah.
There's quite a funny moment where he goes into the clinic and is looking through the drawers, and Wilson catches him. And it's just like, you know, because House, as you said with Foreman, like, House is like, do not question me. And there's that moment where kind of the veil falls away and, you know, Wilson catches him sort of questioning himself.
Yeah. The other interesting thing is you also get a glimpse into how he follows rules, which is very, very loosely. So he just had a bit of a standoff with Foreman about the Hippocratic Oath. And he said, yeah, it's first do no harm. And then you have all the other bollocks on top of it. And that doesn't seem like a good idea. So why should I follow this oath that has all these absurd complications to it that don't really apply to the real world? And that's really interesting. And it really pisses off Foreman, who then goes, right, I've got to nip this in the bud.
And then there's a scene in the chapel where it was once again established that House loves watching trashy TV. And I do know a lot of really clever people who just love watching trashy TV. It helps them kind of shut down. And it's quite nice that they Like, it's not like, because you know in Sherlock Holmes, who House is pretty much based off, as we discussed earlier, like Sherlock's always like doing puzzles, like he's doing heroin to kind of knock himself out, like he can't shut down. But it's quite nice that House is sort of a bit of a more normal person, like he just watches trashy TV.
Yeah, but he's just watching trashy TV about his job.
Yeah, that's true.
Which is even more freakishly weird.
Well, he just trying to solve cases in the show as well, I seem to remember.
Yeah, but the weird thing is it's kind of like a bit of a postmodern thing. It's like, ooh, House is watching what we're kind of trying to evolve, which is the medical procedural drama.
Mm.
This is an interesting point. House is talking with the nun now.
Yeah.
Kind of like testing her.
Well, yeah, he enjoys, like there's a, during that sequence, he makes her, you know, bitch about her colleagues, you know, makes her eat the chocolate and kind of get, and he enjoys making her give in to those sins. Mm. He enjoys proving people wrong, that they're not good people and that they're kind of like piety is sort of bullshit.
Well, that it's impractical in the real world.
Yeah, I guess a bit like the Hippocratic Oath thing. He like doesn't believe in oaths because he just thinks that they get in the way of living. Yeah. But he, on top of this as well, I really like the patients in this. I think they, like there's a lot of scenes with all the nuns, and each one of them has, you know, a different character trait. Like this one in the chapel, who's kind of talking about the patient behind her back. It's sort of like, you know, it's a nice insight. It doesn't make them seem like they're all pious. It makes them seem like they're people, and there's something going on. And although it's small, it's a bit more exploration into the characters, into the sub characters and the patients.
Because that's where he usually finds the solution, is by delving into the lives that they hide from doctors. And that's the thing, you know, if you go to a doctor's, are you 100% candid about everything that you do?
Exactly. Well, and that's the thing. It's the one of the nurses he talks to, she complains that she thinks that the patient is a bit of a faker, that she's always lying about symptoms that don't make any sense and there's too many of them, which is actually goes on to it, House doesn't solve the case using that information, but it's definitely an aspect of the case. We find out that she has like an underlying condition that's making her ill, which we'll go into when we get later in the episode. But that little detail hints to the end. And although House isn't suddenly have a eureka moment and that solves the whole case, it's just nice that those little details are being fed in and also expanding on the characters. Because not only does that nun, you know, tell us something about herself by going and sort of backstabbing her to Dr. House, but it also tells us something about the case. I really like the way that those two are melded together.
Mm. He's off the case.
Oh,
Cuddy
no.
has kind of gone to extreme lengths of saying, basically, there are all these crazy things happening. You've come up with a hypothesis, and the hypothesis nearly killed her. We're taking you off.
Yeah. But he enjoys it. He smiles at Foreman.
Yeah, because he's already kind of clocked onto Foreman.
Yeah.
Foreman's... It's not like a Digimon. Yes. Foreman. Special ability. Being a thorn in House's side. Fantastic. But now they're in this kind of seminar situation. And one of the interesting things about this is how close in Cuddy is in on the scene and how level-ish she is with the rest of the people in the scene. And I think it shows that kind of more... level playing field that she uses, and then in the other episodes, House is in the other instances, you see House standing up next to the chalkboard while they're sitting down trying to figure it out.
Yeah, no,
it's kind of a bit like
point.
A power thing.
Yeah, and House is almost like, as with Foreman chucking him off the case, like Cuddy's trying to be involving, but House stands and he's like, if anyone stood up, that's kind of what House wants them to do. He wants them to stand up and start yelling things at him.
Yeah,
like he wants people to, you know, really, really bring themselves up. Although then it really annoys him when they do sometimes.
Yeah.
So he's a complete hypocrite in that sense. But that kind of follows through with his, you know, you can't really stick to any singular rules in your life.
Well, he does the exact same thing to everybody else. I think he's just trying to make them more house-like.
Yeah, absolutely. He just kind of, like, gets off on chaos.
Yeah. He is very anarchic. Mm. His approach to things is very anarchic. I think the other thing that really interests me is how Cameron does play like a minor role in the in kind of saying to people like Cuddy and Foreman that maybe there is an underlying issue to this, and they're all like, "No, it's not. It's not an underlying issue. It's all to do with House. He's given a dodgy treatment, and they're sick. It's all House's fault." And it's interesting to see that Cameron kind of steps up a little bit although a minor character in the trio this time round, is always in the background kind of echoing those things.
Well, that's expanded on as well, because while House enjoys Foreman kind of standing up to him, Cameron sort of tries to do the same thing, but as you say, like, constantly reiterating House's theory that it might be right, but House gives her a bollocking at the end, saying, "But you should have really stood up and said it, like, it's good that you had an idea." But, you know, he respects Foreman enough. Even though Foreman caused way more problems, Foreman at least stood up. And that's what he respects. And I don't think Cameron's grasping that yet. She's kind of trying to find out what House wants. And then she wants to be that. But for the moment, she just thinks having a good idea is it. And as you say, she's got to stop being so in the back seat.
Yeah.
The thing I like about this episode as well is there's a lot of external scenes where House isn't in the hospital doing medicine because he's off the case. He even goes to the monastery at this point and interrogates one of the nurses just to learn some more about the patient as a person, and because nobody has any ideas about the medical side, so he just sort of goes and is like, "I'm just going to learn everything about this person," and it's a lot more of a Sherlock Holmes element to it. Like, he's investigating. Like, it's like, you know, he's just a generally resourceful guy. He's not just a good doctor. I think once Hugh Laurie said in an interview, like, if House had been a weapons dealer, he'd have been a great weapons dealer, because it's more like that he's good at whatever he wants to do rather than, like, specifically medicine.
Yeah. I guess to condense that down, I guess it's being an excellent sleuth.
Yes.
But this is an interesting little interaction where we find out about the background of the patient, one that has been kind of whitewashed by the other sisters of the nunnery.
Yeah, you're right. And it's quite funny that it only comes out because fundamentally House doesn't trust human nature. He doesn't think anybody's good. But and then he's kind of proven right.
Yeah.
But he also, weirdly, when she tells him about the backstory and says, "We didn't tell you because it wasn't medically relevant," House agrees. And skipping forward, as we sometimes do, that does become medically relevant, her backstory. So it's kind of weird that House doesn't think that, like, historical drug use and pregnancy might not be interfering with it, even though they do become very relevant later on.
Maybe he's lying to her. Make it easy.
Yeah. It's true. It's not the first time that he'd tell a ludicrous lie to get out of a situation. Although that then does lead on to the tea theory that she's taking too much tea in. Oh, yeah. No, sorry. I'm completely wrong. The tea, in fact, explains why she had such a bad reaction to the original epinephrine, which clears House's name. It doesn't actually lead on to any further diagnosis.
No.
Yeah, it just gets House back on the case. And then obviously we see the interaction where he, you know, where he is like, you know, even though Foreman and Cameron both had their own theories and were butting heads, he actually respects Foreman, even though Foreman was wrong, because Foreman stood up to him more. And that's part of Cameron starting to realize that maybe just being right isn't important. It's just also having a bit of a spine and a backbone and be willing to die on the hill for things you believe in.
Yeah, and Cameron is one of those characters who kind of wavers between what is convenient and what is true. And for House, going for convenience is not good at all. It's a big no-no.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, the last episode is a perfect example of that. Like, Cameron's just, you know, oh, even though your baby is about to die, I'm going to tell you the convenient truth. And you're right, she flips between those two, like, just outlooks on life, which, as you say, aren't really compatible, and House certainly doesn't respect one of them.
Yeah. I guess because it's fence-sitting, you know, oh, I'll be convenient when it's tough for me. I'll tell the truth when it's easy for me to tell the truth. Whereas Foreman has always done the difficult thing. It would have been much easier for him to just allow his boss to do what he wants. But he, in pursuit of the truth and saving the life, he was willing to confront House, albeit in a kind of backhanded way, and maybe even a way that House would kind of respect. Being able to find a way to prevent someone from potentially killing someone by accident or by error in this case.
Absolutely. And there are a lot of, I mean, we'll get to these, but it will be quite interesting when we see the circumstances where, like, House is a total hypocrite, because this certainly isn't the only time this happens. And there are other times where House doesn't respect it, even though it's effectively the same decision. Because House does hate being undermined as well, as much as he, in these earlier episodes, preaches that it's a virtue to go behind his back.
Yeah. So I think that's something we'll see as the series progresses, is just how conflicted House is actually inside. And sometimes I think he doesn't always practice what he preaches. At the moment, he's this kind of anarchist. He says, like, science is whatever you kind of test. It's whatever works.
Mm.
And the truth is not something that necessarily conforms to rules.
Yeah.
But I guess we'll see that actually there are limits to that philosophy, especially with House.
Which, well, I think it's a good thing that House is hypocritical, because I don't think, like, inconsistencies are annoying. Like, inconsistencies and, like, I don't know, there's a fine line, because people are hypocrites, like, by their nature. No one practices what they preach. And I think, like, even though I'm talking about that there's, like, inconsistencies in the character, I actually think that, like, in a way makes them more believable. I would prefer that, rather than just having, like, as you say, House just having this science is always right and just being like this virtue of rational thought, which he certainly isn't.
Mm. And another key scene in this is the relationship between Chase and the patient, especially the scene where he's in the isolation room with her and she's kind of upset and is starting to realize that she wants to die. And they have a very kind of intense theological discussion, which ends with her saying, well, why did you leave seminary school? Because he had joined a seminary school in Australia, and that he had passed a test. No, he had not passed a test, but she did, the test of faith. How would you describe it?
I guess the test is just believing in God, right? Which, one thing I do like about Chase, and I'm not sure, like, I'd like to hear your thoughts on this as well, because the whole team in general is pretty secular or, like, atheist, I'm pretty certain, from things they say. But obviously House is, like, the more, like, aggressively anti-theist of them.
Yeah.
But yeah, so the thing I like about Chase is that although Chase is, like, not religious, when she is doubting her religion, Chase, like, has enough empathy where he actually convinces her that her religion is important and she should hold on to it, even though he has, like, a problem with the church based on his childhood. But I think if House was in that room, he'd be like, oh, finally, you're coming to your senses. Like, it would be a much more different conversation, as you say. Like, they wouldn't have a theological discussion necessarily. House would just say, everything you're saying is rubbish.
Yeah.
And move on. I think that makes Chase's, like, relationship to religion quite unique, which makes that a good scene. Because, I mean, we were talking earlier about how quite a lot of American TV shows will often, because the writers are primarily, like, there are a lot of Christians in America, and they'll, like, I think Christianity and being religious are often seen as, like, a really, like, good quality that other characters should aspire to. Whereas I think this handles it very well in that Chase is being, like, very humanist in terms of his, like, wanting her to hold on to her religion rather than him being, like, you know, being religious is the only way to get through this. It's the only way that you can have hope.
I think the other thing is there's a degree of manipulation.
Well, you're right. As happened there, actually, Chase ends up talking her into her, like, following her religious beliefs so much that she actually attempts to check out against medical advice. So he manipulated her too much.
Yeah. And sometimes I feel like, I think with... in terms of the writers, it's just seen as a good hedge to kind of hedge your bets in a theological discussion, especially when you're trying to just slightly push the envelope. So he's now going into the isolation unit to talk to the patient. And I think this is like the kind of climax of the episode, because it's all about this kind of rationalism versus religious debate that's been going on throughout the episode.
Yeah. And you know what, actually, even against what I just said, that House would talk her out of her religion, he does kind of toe the line here. I think it shows a different quality to House slightly, that he is at least like, He's clearly a clever man, and he understands when a situation needs to be handled in a certain way. Because he's such a impulsive, dismissive, like, rationalist, that a lot of the time you just think that he's, like, just completely blind to all context. But in this situation, it kind of feels like he comes down to her level and, like, understands the consequences of what's going to happen if he handles this wrong.
Yeah. And I think you see the outline of his entire world belief, well, apart, maybe not to that extent, but his whole belief is in experience and logic, and religion goes against that as well. So this is where the dividing line debate begins, really.
Yeah, like he uses the argument of there is evil in the world. And yeah, that's why he thinks the whole concept is ridiculous. But then she comes back with the very popular counter argument that actually through all of those terrible things, good things happen, and that's where God exists. That's where he lives, whereas House is just like, I refuse to accept that any God would do this. Yeah. And then there's that great line as well, like, I know when you cross the road that you look both ways. Like, he was also pointing out, like, the hypocrisy of believing in God and faith.
Well, yeah, and then he starts attacking the idea by saying, well, if it doesn't matter if God's going to be within you, whether you live or die, you may as well live. It's more preferable.
Yeah, which is like he's mocking her to an extent and criticizing her views, but he's kind of, it's not necessarily hostile.
No,
he's saying, like, you can have that faith, but just let me cure you, because I need to cure you.
Yeah, he grows indifferent to her faith. He's just seeing it as a bit of an he's seeing it as an obstacle to trying to treat her. Uh-oh, eureka moment.
Yeah.
What's inside? Yeah, what's inside?
We haven't had one for a while. So yeah, as you say, Gaz, he says God's inside her. Wilson says, oh, you know, maybe you should, like, go looking for it. And then House is like, oh my God, she had, like, an abortion. Maybe that's inside her as well, I guess.
It could be
is the logic there.
Yeah, and I guess it's looking for, ironically, in a Catholic nun, a contraceptive device, which is quite interesting.
Mm.
And this is where the whole mystery kind of pulls itself together. It's like just a drawstring on a bag. It just goes shoop.
Well, it's nice. I mean, it's all been set up. And once again, like these small mysteries are just very well done. Like, the writers really you know, they manage to pull you along with medicine that is complicated, but that the audience understands through like analogy and just like, you know, things, medical issues being present, but are caused by like things that people understand. Like, we might not understand exactly the process by why the contraceptive is causing these problems, but we do learn that the contraceptive, you know, may have happened, and everyone says it out loud. I think the show is very good at really drawing in a medically ignorant audience.
Well, yeah, but Chase does a good explainer on what's going on with the copper allergy.
Mm.
It's also ironic that obviously it's a bit of a kind of sideways look at religion by putting it as a copper cross. Bit of symbolism there. I don't know what that means.
Well, and the funny thing being that actually House's original diagnosis of her having a copper allergy was correct.
Yeah.
It just turns out that the copper was in her and that was causing more problems.
Yeah, and the additional copper exposure just tipped her over the edge.
Yeah, like, it's the show does this a few times, but it's nice, this idea of, like, you can be right.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, you can be right, but the mystery is often deeper than that. So that's, like, a way the show does red herrings really well, is, like, it actually has them get the right answer immediately, but then they spend the entire episode doubting themselves, and then it turns out they were right.
Yeah.
Like, I think it shows, like, kind of the way that you can be correct and come up with an answer, but actually, like, the way you follow a logical train of thought can make you think you're wrong when actually you're right based on evidence.
Mm. This is a pivotal moment as well in the development of the two characters, Wilson and House, because Wilson starts by inviting House over, but then we slowly see there's trouble at Mill for Wilson.
Well, go on, walk us through Wilson's situation.
Oh, it seems like he has some marital issues, and he's not processing them well. So he's decided to go to Dr. House for Christmas. Dr. House is for Christmas. House's house, or House's home for Christmas. My Jesus Christ, it's so depressing.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. He, like, invites House around for Christmas dinner, and then when House says no, he invites himself around, and, like, you're like, okay, that is entirely inconsistent with wanting House around to have a nice Christmas with your wife.
Yes.
And but then it has this quite nice montage of them interacting, which I always find those montages where, like, House and Wilson are laughing quite annoying, because we don't really see that in the show. Like, we see them laughing and entertaining each other, but we never see, like, to the level that House is chuckling and they're joking, which sometimes I wish, like, the show would have, like, would lay off the kind of, like, 1-2, 1-2 competing with each other banter, and just have the characters, like, just have a conversation where they're entertaining each other.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen often enough, I don't think, especially the fact they're supposed to be very good friends.
Also, the montage is interesting because everyone's friggin' working at Christmas. And also, I think they missed a beat by not having the shitting Father Christmas giving out all the presents to the children at the hospital.
That's true. Just like him, like, with a
smoking,
like,
a cigarette.
Know, one of them lit, hanging out.
And then it,
and there's,
yeah.
Oh, sorry, go on.
And then it ends with just House on the piano.
Well, it also ends up with Chase in the chapel, which at first you think, oh, maybe he's discovering his religion again, but then he walks away, which is quite obvious symbolism.
Yeah.
About what he's feeling on the matter. Like, he hasn't been convinced.
But he's also conflicted because he went there. Why?
Yeah, it's interesting, and I actually can't entirely remember Chase's, you know, religious journey, so hopefully, you know, as it develops over the next 173 episodes, we can chat about it.
Yeah, and also, I guess the other thing is that maybe it might be a loose end, we don't know. I can't recall from best of my memory this really coming up again, but I might be wrong. Don't quote me, I'm not an expert.
No, I know there is another nun episode in season 8, but that is a long way away.
Oh, fantastic.
I It's literally so far away, Gaz, that one of us might have had a kid by the time we get there.
Oh, that'd be nice, won't it?
That'd be interesting.
Seems very scary. You know, all I'm planning for in the long term is every Christmas I'm going to be eating Chinese takeaway, laughing with you. As you
Perfect.
Have.
But you're not invited.
Oh, that's not good. You're just going to... You'll just invite yourself. It's all right.
I'll come round yours if I have troubles, but we'll see what happens.
Yes.
Yeah, I think unless, Gaz, you've got anything else to discuss, I would consider that, you know, I would consider that episode 5 differentially diagnosed.
Oh, wow. You brought us full circle for the first time.
I know. It's almost like we've got a template now. It's incredible.
What? I don't know what you're talking about. This is pure improvisation on my part. I would never script any of this.
Actually, you know what? That lowers the show's quality a lot if people think this is scripted.
Oh well, make up your own minds. Do you have faith that we would script this? Which might be a reflection of our writing abilities, good or bad, or do you think it's fully improvised? Which might also reflect good or bad on our improvisation skills. But there you go.
There you go. Well, guys, so what are your feelings on the episode in summation?
It's a quite hefty episode. There's a lot of stuff going on in terms of the religion, science, religion, medicine debate, because as with all things, it's not that straightforward. You have ethics gets involved. You have just ways of life get kind of jangled up. You have hypocrisy and lies, and then you have truths where House is dedicated to empirical and logical truths, whereas religion is not necessarily predicated upon those principles. It's a meaty episode, very philosophical, very, very daring for a mainstream primetime medical procedural drama. A lot of other episodes would hedge their, other writers would hedge their bets and go, well, isn't it a bit weird? You know, we have science, but we also have religion. Whoa.
Yeah, you're right. other shows might have had the mystery unsolved.
Yes.
Whereas House had an explanation and that was it.
Well, at least it's coming out with a thesis, right?
Yeah.
Saying, exactly. Well, here's what House thinks.
Yeah.
Deal with it.
And I completely agree. I think it like really capitalizes on all the interesting like subjects for House and the patient to butt heads with and the team to butt heads with. It's got some good character development. It's got some really good B subplots.
Yes.
Some B plots. Yeah, like House, it's not just House solving the case. The fact that they just tweak it and like House is just a bit outside, like he's working on the case, but he's not technically involved, and Cuddy's involved in it. Yeah, it really like it tells its story in a very interesting way, and it's very succinct because it does it all within the runtime that's expected, like 44 minutes or however long it was. I think like at this point the series has been like, you know, it's been a good show, but from episode 4 maternity to this, I think like it's like a bike going down a hill. I think it just like just really picks up the pace. This is where I think the show is clearly becoming, I'm watching it again, I've seen it so many times, watching it again, I understand why I like it so much and why it became such a classic.
Well, there's definitely been a leap in quality. I think there's more experimentation and depth involved in terms of discussing and playing with different issues while also conforming to a very good, very robust format. But the characters are still needing a bit more development, I think. And then we're getting to that point now where it's starting to tease out all the individual bits and pieces that make up the characters in this show. And I'm looking forward to seeing how that goes. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah, there's so much more to come of House and this podcast series, which will be out every Monday morning.
Wow.
So, yeah. Well, thanks, Gaz, for joining me.
And thank you, Harvey, for hosting this podcast.
Well, we co-host.
Oh, great.
I feel like you're trying to shift the blame on me every time.
Well, of course.
You're trying to make me responsible.
I want
for this.
Zero responsibility, full credit.
That's true. And thank you to, I don't know what our audience is now, maybe it's six people.
Wow.
Thank you to all of you guys for listening.
Thank you.